You are listening to the Pronk Pop Show, presented by Raymond Thomas Pronk, the People's Paladin Pronk, propagating faith, family, friends, freedom first. Broadcasted by Renaissance Radio, Radiating Reason, and KDUX Web Radio. Podcasted by PronkPops.wordpress.com and KDUXWebRadio.wordpress.com. You are listening to KDUX Web Radio, broadcasting live from Richland College in Dallas, Texas. We're the voice of Richland College. My name is Raymond Thomas Pronk, the presenter of the Pronk Pop Show. Views expressed on this show are my own, unless otherwise stated, and do not reflect the opinion of KDUX Web Radio, Richland College, or the Dallas County Community College District. Welcome to the Pronk Pop Show. This is the Monday edition, and a quick announcement. We will not be having a shows Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday. The studio is closed Thursday and Friday, and I have some business that I got to take care of Wednesday. I woke up to the news that President Trump met with Chairman Kim of North Korea at the DMZ, the Demilitarized Zones. That's the strip between North and South Korea. Remember, we're in a truce with North Korea. The war technically is still on, but we're in a truce situation. And what was unique and special, and yes, Trump always gets criticized for anything he does, he went into North Korea. Like I said, there's a strip marking the border or boundary between each country, and he crossed over, shook Chairman Kim's hand, and Chairman Kim said it was a rather courageous act. It was a great photo opportunity. Now, if all that happened was that, I might be a little critical, but no, something was accomplished. And that something was the restart of negotiations. They've sort of been dead in the water. Teams have not been meeting. At least we're talking. There's dialogue between the United States government, its representatives in the State Department primarily, and representatives from North Korea. And that was, universally approved, especially by Japan and South Korea, because they're concerned that they don't want to go back to the previous situation. You know, when Obama was president and prior to these meetings that they've had, where missiles, primarily intermediate range missiles, were being lobbed into the Sea of Japan. And you also have short range missiles that were flying over into the sea bordering on North and South Korea. It looks like negotiations are on, so that's definitely, in my mind, an achievement, an accomplishment. But let's not forget, what is President Trump trying to do? He's trying to stop the spread of nuclear weapons, so-called nuclear proliferation, to other nations. Because it's clear to me, if North Korea continues on the way they're going, that Japan, together with South Korea, has no choice but to develop their own nuclear weapons, test them, produce them. They're not going to stand idly by why North Korea does this. Now, Japan doesn't want to do it. South Korea doesn't want to do it. They're relying on the United States to provide, let's say, a nuclear shield. But the key thing that I think most people need to understand, there's no good military option here. The United States doesn't want to engage in a nuclear war. It could finish North Korea off in less than an hour, probably less than 30 minutes. But that would mean a preemptive attack on North Korea, and President Trump is not going to do it. Maybe a Democratic president would do it, or a progressive president would do it, but I believe Donald Trump is still, his preferable foreign policy is one of non-intervention. Only if the United States is attacked, its armed forces, its citizens and property, will he seriously consider military operations against whoever is attacking us, for example, the Islamic Republic of Iran. But even then, it has to involve loss of life, loss of property, whether it's the armed forces or military or civilians, American citizens, though. I think that is, in my opinion, Donald Trump's red line. And then he would definitely launch an attack, hopefully not proportionate, probably several orders of magnitude worse. And it would be sort of one and done, one strike and done, and then see what the other nation or party does. So we had history being made, and there's photos of it. And if you go to my companion blog, which is promptpops.wordpress.com, you can see President Trump side by side with Chairman Kim in North Korea. It was somewhat of a surprise because President Trump didn't even know that Chairman Kim was in the country, but he invited him Saturday, and he did come to shake hands. And it was a short, brief meeting, but I think everyone is a winner here because you're just moving the negotiations. It's always, in my opinion, wise to talk if you truly have something to talk about and you believe that both parties would negotiate in good faith. Now, it's clear to either our representatives or theirs that we're not negotiating in good faith, then I think it's incumbent to walk out. You're just wasting time and it's showing weakness. So I think the overall response of the American people was favorable. He was being criticized, yes, by Democrats, that he doesn't have anything to show for it. And this is providing an incentive. It's the last part that I said, are these people kidding me? Nothing has happened under Democrat or Republican administration until President Trump came to office. I say nothing. First, we appeased them, and he double-crossed us, and that's why President Trump has imposed rather severe sanctions on North Korea. But the one problem with sanctions is all you need is one or two countries like Communist China or Russia to not comply with the sanctions. Almost everything that North Korea imports into the country is from Communist China, over 90%. And you also have to recognize that North Korea is a very, very poor country. Even though they've developed and have nuclear weapons estimated at somewhere between 50 and 60, what we're not really sure of is the size. The key obstacle, it takes time, but everything takes time, is to miniaturize or downsize the nuclear weapons so they can fit on a missile, and missiles would be the delivery system. And they have tested, not only they have many, many short-range missiles as well as intermediate, but they also have tested an ICBM, an intercontinental ballistic missile. But that testing has stopped. Both the intermediate range as well as the long range, the ICBM testing has stopped. And they have not tested any nuclear weapons yet. Yes, they've had some short-range missile test, but they have thousands of short-range missiles. So that's nothing new. They have a whole arsenal of various sized missiles. And I'm not going to get into the military thing, but what's two key points that I need to make? Where did they get the technology to build a nuclear weapon? Communist China, with some help from other nations, most likely Russia for the rockets and maybe Pakistan for some parts of the nuclear weapon, but primarily from Communist China. I bring that up because, yes, the G20 meeting is over. What was the primary press attention was on the meeting between President Trump and his negotiating team with the Chinese. And he did meet, I call him Chairman for Life, Xi. And guess what? Something happened there. Hopefully, I was expecting something to happen. They're not going to put what was scheduled to happen, namely put an additional 25% tariff on a lot more goods. They've more or less delayed that. And again, they're going to be negotiating. But you need to really link what's happening in North Korea with what's happening or about to happen in terms of more trade negotiations. You need to put pressure on Communist China to in turn put pressure on North Korea to ultimately ultimately denuclearize the Korean Peninsula. In other words, destroy their nuclear weapons. And that includes both the testing sites, their production sites, as well as the missiles that are long-range or intercontinental ballistic missiles, intermediate to long-range missiles. That needs to happen. If it doesn't happen, then at some point in time, we need to have a linkage between our trade negotiations and the real serious business and the important business of trying to avoid nuclear proliferation. That's the goal. President Trump has made it very clear he does not want the spread of nuclear weapons not only in the Far East, but also in the Middle East. And who is helping, or at least in the past has been helping the Middle East in terms of the Islamic Republic of Iran? That lot of gas, natural gas and oil. And North Korea needs that. So we need linkages between the negotiations on stopping nuclear proliferations in both regions. And that's going to require the Communist Chinese Party to put pressure on North Korea. Because really, the option of going to war, we always have that option. If North Korea or Communist China should foolishly attack either our military or citizens, we would go to war. I think we would. I think what Trump could do is request a declaration of war. That's what should happen. Doesn't mean it's going to happen. But neither the United States, it's either the government or people of the United States, we don't want war. Neither does Japan. Neither does South Korea. And I think, really, neither does North Korea, because they would face serious destruction. And they know we could do it. We have submarines that can launch missiles that could flatten North Korea. But we would kill tens of millions of people. And you better believe North Korea, if they picked up that when they were being attacked by missiles, would immediately attack South Korea. So in the end, literally millions, probably tens of millions of people could die. That's not in the interest of any country or its people. So I think the key here is patience, but it also requires talk and linking both our trade negotiations with what's happening in North Korea. I think the biggest news was that we're going to delay in imposing the tariffs. Now, one sort of flap, and I'm not going to play it because you can't hear what's going on. I'll tell you what happened. When you have a press opportunity, you have a number of people in the media, and there was a lot of media here, firing questions at the president when he was meeting Putin. And several talk radio shows try to play the clip, and you can't hear what's going on. But what President Trump said, he got a question: Are you going to tell Putin not to interfere with our elections? So he turned to Vladimir Putin and said, "You better not." I'm paraphrasing here. "You better not intervene in our elections." And Putin sort of laughed. I sort of laughed. This is the Russian collusion thing. They won't let that dog die a peaceful. The Democrats, I think, many of them want to impeach Donald Trump. And I've said I'm not a Democrat or Republican. If the Democrats want to impeach Donald Trump, be my guest. But I think that would completely backfire. They know they can't get a conviction in the Senate, and they don't have any crime. They all were betting that Mueller was going to have the evidence that Donald Trump conspired, was in cahoots with the Russians, and he wasn't, and he knew it. And he gave them thousands, tens of thousands, actually upwards of over a million documents, cooperated with Mueller, and Mueller came to the conclusion that the Democratic Party can't accept is that neither Donald Trump or anyone in his campaign conspire with the Russians. End of story. It should be the end of story. But, and this is the big but, Mueller wouldn't. You see, if you're a prosecutor, your decision is very much binary. Either you prosecute, in other words, you believe you have the evidence to convict someone beyond a reasonable doubt with the jury. If you don't have the evidence, you don't prosecute. And then in the typical situation, nothing is said. That's important to understand. Either the prosecutor has the evidence, in which case he impanels a grand jury, and the grand jury hears the evidence. They're the ones that make the decision whether or not to indict someone. And then it's up to the Department of Justice, U.S. attorneys, prosecutors to prosecute the case. So if you don't have the evidence, the normal situation, you don't issue a report. Here we had a report that was largely disclosed. Very, very little was left out other than the grand jury testimony, classified information about sources and methods, and any other information that could either interfere with ongoing either investigations or prosecutions or would damage the reputation of some of the people involved. So most of the Mueller report you can read online, and so can Congress. Now, a little more complete report, eight members of Congress can read. What Mueller wouldn't do is say, and this is the issue, he didn't have the evidence to prosecute Trump for obstruction of justice. And let me just say this, about 95-99% of the time, if you need a crime to prosecute someone for obstruction of justice, here you had no crime. So how can you obstruct justice? Now some in the Mueller team thought they had some evidence. But when the attorney general and the deputy attorney general definitely reviewed it, they said, you don't have the evidence. And again, if you don't have the evidence to take it first to a grand jury and then to trial, you're supposed to drop it. You're not supposed to say anything. That's the standard procedure. That is Department of Justice procedure. So you have some people in Congress, the Democrats, especially Nadler, but there are other people that want to continue this. The American people have moved on. The American people don't believe this Russian collusion nonsense. The only people that believe it is primarily where it came from, Hillary Clinton. Now we're waiting. Remember, it's July. I bring that up because we were supposed to hear from the Inspector General report either May or June. Well, we're in July. I'm talking Michael Horowitz, that was investigating the abuse of the FISA court application process. FISA is the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Act court. It's primarily used where the FBI, for example, needs a warrant on people that are, for example, spying on the United States. That's why it's foreign intelligence, as the name says, surveillance. Surveillance is another word for spy. So they went to get this warrant, but they didn't disclose to the justice, and it wasn't a hearing. They just submit an application. It was signed by either the FBI director. There was an initial application and three renewals. And they didn't tell the justice, the judge, that first of all, the basis, the primary evidence they had was a bought and paid for by the Hillary Clinton campaign and the Democratic National Committee to pay for dirt, opposition research on Donald Trump. And ultimately what happened, they gave the money to their law firm, who in turn gave it to Fusion GPS, who in turn hired a retired British MI5 intelligence operative. Hadn't been in Russia in years. And he paid for what has been described as rumors, fabricated information, disinformation from various Russian government, primarily in the intelligence area. It was very salacious. That's the famous golden showers, where allegedly, no proof, no way to verify any of this, that Trump hired some prostitutes to urinate on a bed that Barack Obama and Michelle Obama slept in when they were in Russia. It was dressed up as an intelligence report. No, it wasn't. It was just some information that they got from questionable sources in Russia that were paid for. And that's not a basis. You need to verify the information you're using in a FISA warrant. And that's the procedure. They didn't do that, nor did they clearly disclose to the judge that it was the Hillary Clinton campaign and the Democratic National Committee that paid for it. Now, why wouldn't they disclose it? Because they knew if they disclose it, they would never get the warrant. This was just a pretext used to spy on who? Candidate Trump and then President Trump and the people in his campaign. You had partisans both in the Department of Justice and the FBI spying on American citizens, those involved in the Trump campaign. And they did this having the warrant on Carter Page. Carter Page was not charged with anything, nothing. They were using him to leapfrog to other people in the campaign that he communicated with, and in turn, any people in the campaign that they communicated with. In other words, they were surveilling or spying. Trump initially, when he initially said they were wiretapping him, everybody laughed. You can't be serious. Well, he was right. Now, why did he know it? Because the head of the National Security Agency, an admiral, told him, they're spying on you, sir. And they were. So we're waiting for that other shoe to drop. It's not just the Inspector General's report, but also what is the Department of Justice doing to prosecute those people and both the Department of Justice and the FBI that were surveilling Americans without authorization. And if there was authorization, where did it come from? Well, the only place it could really come from would be the President of the United States. So I think sometime, probably, I'm speculating here, probably in September, something will pop. But before then, I think you're going to get some of the information out of the Inspector General's report. Remember, he's the Inspector General for the Department of Justice, and his name is Michael Horowitz. So that's overdue, and I raise it because I know it's summertime, people are taking vacations, and that can slow things up to a certain extent. But Trump has a political problem. He needs, because his political base are demanding, not just his political base, people that follow this, for example, myself, they want the people that broke the law. What they did is a felony. They used intelligence assets to spy on the American people. Now, they like to say, well, they got a warrant. Comey said that. Well, it was a court-ordered surveillance. That's true, but he doesn't tell you the whole story. Yeah, the court ordered it, but you misled the court, sir. You misrepresented the situation. There was no way to verify anything that was in the so-called Steele dossier. To cut to the chase, it was hearsay information. And if you've ever been in a courtroom, if it's hearsay, the judge is going to throw it out. You see, that's what should have happened to the FISA warrant. In other words, the FISA court really failed us here, and that's the problem. You have partisans not only in the various federal departments, in this case, Department of Justice and the FBI, but you also have a failure of the judges. They can read, and they haven't done anything. To our knowledge, they haven't done anything. Usually, if you do this to a judge, he's going to be mad. He might even throw you in jail for contempt of court. They don't like attorneys pulling the wool over them. But that seems to be a almost routine practice with the FISA court. Congress needs to re-look at the FISA court because it truly did fail us. And there's just been too much abuse of that process. It needs to be cleaned up. Now, I'm not usually in favor of a special counsel, but in this situation, I think a special counsel needs to be appointed. Someone that is truly independent. Now, supposedly they have assigned someone that's a U.S. attorney in Connecticut, Durham, and that is probably the gentleman that's going to take this on, and I suspect we'll hear more. We're definitely going to hear more sometime in the September-December timeframe. If we don't, then something's wrong. And this will be in the news all through the election. Because what we're looking at is crimes by high-level government officials, both the Attorney General, the FBI Director, and their deputies, and members of their staff, and President Obama and people on his staff. This goes to the White House. There's no way this happens unless President Obama authorized it. And see, the question is, it's not that a president can't authorize this, but it has to comply with the law, and you're crossing a big red line. They didn't have the justification to surveil American citizens, including Donald Trump and the people in his campaign. It's abuse of power. It's a felony. You're using government assets to spy on the American people, and they need to be brought to justice. Should not have a dual justice system where if you're the average citizen or low-level or mid-level government employee, then you have to follow the rules. But if you're a high-level government official, President of the United States, Attorney General, FBI Director, their deputies and staff, well, you're above the law. No, that's not how the law reads. And they should get their day in court, but that requires the FBI to panel a grand jury, take the evidence they have, present it to the grand jury. And again, it's up to not the FBI, but it's up to the grand jury to indict people. And at that stage, once they're indicted, it's up to Department of Justice lawyers or a special counsel to go after the people that have broken the law. That's what the American people are expecting, and they thought that candidate Trump promised that he was going to get to the bottom of this. I think he wants to get to the bottom of it because he said many times no president should have to in the future put up with this. This needs to be stopped. Well, the only way you can stop that is if you make examples of all the people that have broke the law. And in this case, we're talking high-level government officials, either the heads of departments or their deputies. And I don't want to forget the Central Intelligence Agency was involved in this. They were trying to, but they failed, put a spy in the the Trump campaign. And they were using British intelligence to do that. And I'm talking about, well, two people, Stephen Halper. I'm trying to think of the name. It escapes me. They were trying, they successfully did set up a couple of Donald Trump's low-level advisors. By Halper, for example, would call Papadopoulos and say, you know about Russia, Russia has Hillary Clinton emails. Well, he didn't know. But then he subsequently, this guy met with the Australian diplomat, and he took it to the FBI. This was a big setup, folks. This was planned. Didn't happen spontaneously. What they were trying to do is get, I think, Stephen Halper, by hook or by crook, part of the people advising Trump, the candidate, and later the president, as what? As an advisor. And he would be an informant. That's what they were trying to do. So all this needs to come out. And the American people are demanding it. Now, let's be clear. Most of the American people don't follow this. Call it inside baseball. Call it deep in the weeds. But let me tell you something. I listen to a lot of talk radio. This has been the subject of many, many talk radio shows, really for over a year. So Trump supporters and many of your top talk show radio hosts have been going over this. It's a complicated story, and there are a lot of facts that you have to know, and there's some books out on it. On television, the kind of lead has been Sean Hannity. He has brought on several people that are journalists that are investigating this, and they know a lot. They don't tell us everything, but they too are waiting for these indictments, and I think we'll wake up one morning, probably in the fall, and learn that a number of people have been indicted. What they're going to try to do is work up the chain of command, start with the low-level people and work up. And think about it. It's just like if it were an organized crime case or a drug cartel case. You start with the low-level people, and you want them to inform on their bosses, and in turn, their bosses in turn on the higher-ups. That's the way they'll work it. Because what they're really interested in is the Attorney General, the FBI Director, their two deputies, President of the United States, their National Security Advisor, and others that were involved in, for example, unmasking the names of American citizens. So I'm not going to make the show about that, but it struck me we're in July and we haven't heard the Inspector General of the Department of Justice report on what's called FISA abuse, the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Act court abuse, abuse of the procedures and the court by not disclosing what they knew the court should have had. They passed it off as intelligence when all it was political, paid for by the Democratic Party and the Hillary Clinton campaign, opposition research from Russia, and paid the Christopher Steele, paid Russian operatives, government employees. He's not going to tell you the name. That's part of the problem. There's no way to verify any of this information. And many people suspect this is just Russian disinformation. Oh, yeah, they interfered in our election, but who truly was conspiring with the Russians? It wasn't Donald Trump. It was Hillary Clinton and her campaign through intermediaries, Fusion GPS and Christopher Steele. And keep in mind, we would know virtually none of this had Hillary Clinton won. The only reason we know as much as we know now is Hillary Clinton lost. If Donald Trump had not won the Electoral College, remember, you need 270 votes. He had 304. Actually, he had 306, but only 304 voted for him. Hillary Clinton had 227. So Donald Trump more than exceeded the 270 minimum that you need to become president. That's why he's president today. That and the fact he ran a better campaign, and he did not win the popular vote, but you don't become president no matter how high the popular vote is. I think Hillary had something like 3 million more votes, but most of those votes were from California. And now what is the left trying to do? They're trying to change the rules. What they're trying to do is scrap the Electoral College system. Well, I'm against that. Most Americans are against that. Because we want a president of the United States elected by the states, not by a popular vote. And that's the way it was set up by the founding fathers, because they understood. If you did it by the popular vote, what would any candidate do? They would only spend time in those states that have the most votes. Massachusetts, New York, New Jersey, Ohio, Michigan, Texas, Florida, California. There are about 10 states that you need to carry. And the rest of the states, with some exceptions, you wouldn't even bother going in. You need to, where can I get 270 votes or more? And where should I spend my time? Well, if we didn't have the Electoral College, what would candidates do? They would go to those states that had the most people. And they would ignore, in essence, the middle of the country. So I'm for maintaining the Electoral College. I don't think the radical extremist Democrat socialists that are trying to do this are going to be successful, because a number of people are already alerted what they're doing. They're also trying to pack the Supreme Court by adding more judges. That's not going to, I say not going to. They're trying, folks. They're trying. Whether they will succeed or not remains to be seen. Now, one more story, and I debated whether to go over this. It has to do with immigration and what's happening at the U.S.-Mexican border. Just a review. Ronald Reagan, together with Republicans and Democrats, passed immigration reform. And part of it was to give citizenship to several million illegals that were working in the country. And it was going to be a one-time, they call it a one-time amnesty, where amnesty means there's a pathway to citizenship. If you got to apply and meet certain requirements, if you apply and meet certain requirements, you could get citizenship. And approximately 2.7 million illegal aliens got citizenship. And they're citizens today. But part of the negotiations and final deal was, not only would primarily Mexicans and some people from Central America primarily would get citizenship, but we would secure the borders. That was 33 years ago. We have yet to truly secure the border. It's not that we don't have some border barrier up, but the border is about 2,000 miles. Over 1,200 miles is in Texas. And only 350 miles are fences designed to stop human beings or slow down human beings, to give the U.S. Border Patrol enough time to catch them breaking into the country. You see, it's still the law of the land, immigration law, and you can go online and read it. You can come to the United States legally. You got to present your papers, which is a passport, and depending on which country you're coming from, a visa, and maybe some vaccination or medical information. Again, it depends where you're coming from. But you got to present your papers for inspection when you enter the United States. That's if you're coming here legally. And millions, tens of millions of people come to the United States legally every year. Why? They're coming here for a whole host of reasons. Some are coming here on vacations. They're tourists. Some are coming here on business. And many more people, not so much in terms of tourists, but many students come here to get educated, primarily a college education. And they usually fly in. They don't have to fly in, but they usually fly in from Europe, around the world, especially if it's on education or for business. And they visit many of our cities. Now, if they're here on a visa, you agree to go home after a certain period of time. You might have a visa for 90 days, 180 days, a year. It depends what's your reason for coming. And there are various types of visas. I'm not getting into that. All I'm trying to say, if you're coming here legally, that's the process. And the United States government allows approximately 1.1 million people to legally immigrate into the United States every year. Now, this has been going on since 1992, basically in the Clinton years, starting in the Clinton years. It's still going on, folks. Now, did the American people say, well, we need a million or 2 million or 3 million? No. It was the politicians that increased it. Historically, the average over many, many decades is about 250,000 a year. It's only Congress, because they were getting campaign contributions primarily from employers, businesses, but also governments, wanted at least 1 million to come in. And they would give campaign contributions to both the Democratic Party and the Republican Party. Grand total, over 33 years, Congress appropriated funding for 350 miles of border fence, together with approximately 300 miles of vehicle fence designed to stop vehicles. They're not really designed to stop humans. You can climb over them, under them, or go around them. But they are effective in stopping or impeding vehicles. I don't count those, because people can pull up to that a vehicle fence, get out, and in a minute or two, they're in the United States. So we've had 33 years of the invasion of the United States by what are technically called and correctly described as illegal aliens. They're aliens. They're coming from a foreign country, and they're all coming from a foreign country, primarily Mexico and Central America, Guatemala, Honduras, El Salvador, but other countries as well. They're coming from around the world. Some come here legally and then overstay their visa. And that's been estimated to be probably 40% of the problem. It's not just the U.S.-Mexican border situation. It's really, from all sources, a good 40%. It could be higher. The problem with the numbers is no one knows exactly how many illegal aliens are here. If you go down to the border and can talk to the supervisors, they will tell you for every one they apprehend, in other words, they catch, a minimum of two or three get away. And over those 33 years, I think the highest was 1.6 million apprehensions. Note, I say apprehensions. Those are the ones that got caught, but two to three got away. So if you just took the apprehension numbers and multiplied them by three, you're going to get a lot bigger number. And remember, for many, many years, they were over a million. And if the last couple of months continues to the end of this year, it'll be back to a million again because of the loophole in terms of asylum. I'll go over that in a minute. Now, I'm giving you this history for a reason. Under both Democrat and Republican administrations, when the Democrats controlled the House, the Senate, and the presidency, and when the Republican Party controlled the House, the Senate, and the presidency, what they did not do is fund an entire, complete 2,000-mile border barrier. And I'll be the first to say there's probably at least 100 to 150 miles that you probably don't need a fence because it's out in the wilderness and the boondocks. It's miles and miles away from a road or any town of any size, and it would be dangerous to cross into the country. So if you subtract 350 miles of human fence plus approximately 150 miles of areas you really don't need a fence, that is a total of 500 miles. We need a 2,000-mile border barrier less those 500 miles. So you need, in terms of a new border barrier, approximately 1,500 miles. And President Trump has said by the end of next year, we'll have at least another 400 miles and maybe more, maybe as high as 500. He promised 1,000 miles. So at least in one term, 4 years of the Trump administration, with very little support from no support from Democrats and little support from Republicans, he had to reprogram money, mainly from the Defense Department, so he could come up with the funds to build that border barrier. And by Election Day, he'll probably have at least 400 miles built. In other words, he's more than double the existing fence, human fence of 350 miles. I call that acceptable. He's not keeping his promise of 1,000 miles. But he's been the only president that's done it. George Bush didn't do it. George H.W. Bush didn't do it. Bill Clinton didn't do it. George W. Bush didn't do it. Barack Obama didn't do it. Oh, yes, they built that 350 miles of human fence. But that's it, folks. So Trump is trying to make progress, but who's fighting him? Congress, primarily Democratic Party. They won't give him a penny. They won't even change the asylum law. And it would take about 15 minutes. It's not a big deal. What am I talking about? The reason you have a problem at the U.S. border today and a crisis at the U.S. border, people are coming with their children and asking for asylum, saying, I'm persecuted. Usually, if you're asking for asylum, and you can do this, and this would be the change of the law. If you want asylum, in other words, let's say you are truly persecuted, you can apply at a U.S. consulate or embassy in whatever country you're in. And then the United States ambassador there and his staff would check it out. And if it's justified, they could allow you to come to the United States as an asylee. I favor that. I'm not against people that are truly prosecuted. I'm talking by the government, by politicians, a political party, a drug cartel, organized crime, or could be religious persecution. I favor, if you qualify, that you have that opportunity. And I think the American people do as well. But it's not going to be millions. It'll be maybe tens of thousands, but not hundreds of thousands. What is happening at the border today? You have people that are really not being persecuted. They're coming here for economic reasons. They're coming here to get a job, to improve their standard of living, and they're using our own laws, our own immigration laws, against us. That's why Donald Trump is saying, change the law. And really, Democrats and Republicans should favor that. But the Democrats are not cooperating at all. They're resisting that. Now, why? Why is it that the Democratic Party is resisting? That's what they call it. They're the resistance. Up until about 10 years ago, yes, when Barack Obama became president, both Republicans and Democrats wanted to stop the illegal alien invasion. At least that's what they said. No longer. The Democratic Party has made a decision and put a priority on not American citizens, but on illegal aliens. They want to give citizenship to all the illegal aliens that are here. That's what they want. That is their political goal. That is their agenda. They're not really going to help Donald Trump in any way unless it starts to embarrass them. And it's starting to embarrass them. Why? We're flooded with illegal aliens trying to break into the United States. But now they're not hiding from the U.S. Border Patrol. They're going right up to them. They got their story down. I'm being persecuted. So the U.S. Border Patrol checks that box. They have credible fear for their life. And they detain them because they're with their children. But because there was an agreement entered into with the U.S. government and the courts, they can only hold them for 21 days. And why, under President Obama, they were separating the children from their parents. And that continued in the Trump administration until Trump supposedly stopped it. But legally, they can only hold them for 21 days because what they're doing is they're releasing the children with their parents. You can only hold the children for 21 days. That agreement needs to be renegotiated, point one. Point two is you need to change the law, this section. Now, I gave you all this story for a reason. You have a group of Hispanic congressmen went down the border, and her name is, I call her the crazy communist Ocasio-Cortez. She said, we're treating the children and the adults there terribly. We're not giving them water or telling them they have to drink out of a toilet. We're getting conflicting stories. Although she went in to the location where they're holding them, she didn't take the tour. Now, there are others that did. But she's alleging that a woman told her the drinking water comes from the toilet. And that's getting a lot of publicity. Well, I did a little research, but I didn't go down there. Yeah, there is a toilet. I asked the common sense question. Usually where there's a toilet, there's a sink. And if the toilet is working, in other words, there's running water, and the sink is working, you can get water out of the sink. And I came up with a picture that was used in a court case in a facility similar in another state, but supposedly it's the same thing. You have a toilet, a steel, stainless steel toilet, and above it a sink. And there's signs in Spanish and English, there is portable water, drinkable water, if you take it out of the sink. What's being done to us is they're manipulating public opinion and trying to blame this administration for really the problem that they created. You see, they should have changed the law, and they should have provided the funding to complete the fence. And if that had been done, we wouldn't have this problem. So right now, it's in the news all over. You don't know who to believe, but I don't believe these radical, extremist Democrat socialists. I'm not saying it's fake news, because all these facilities are overcrowded. They weren't given the funding, and they've been asking for the funding. And a couple of months ago, it was the Democrats saying there wasn't a crisis. Well, there is a crisis. It is on the news. The Democrats were lying then, and they're lying again, as far as I'm concerned. So stay tuned in coming shows as we get more reliable information. We'll see what those toilets and sinks look like. It's definitely overcrowded because these facilities were never meant to provide temporary living space for thousands of people. And only last week did Congress finally approve some money. Not as much money as they wanted, but $4.6 billion. Apparently, they know the negative images are getting to the United States citizens. So they finally came up with the money. And it passed in the Senate, I think it was 86, overwhelmingly passed in the Senate, but it also finally got approved in the House. Thank you for listening. And now, America the Beautiful.
My name is Raymond Thomas Pronk, the presenter of the Pronk Pop Show. Views expressed on this show are my own, unless otherwise stated, and do not reflect the opinion of KDUX Web Radio, Richland College, or the Dallas County Community College District. You are listening to KDUX Web Radio, broadcasting live from Richland College in Dallas, Texas, with a voice of Richland College. You are listening to the Pronk Pop Show, presented by Raymond Thomas Pronk, the People's Paladin Pronk, propagating faith, family, friends, freedom first. Broadcasted by Renaissance Radio, Radiating Reason, and KDUX Web Radio. Podcasted by ProncPops.wordpress.com and KDUX Web Radio.wordpress.com.